Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lauffel, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm Adam Lauffel, your host, and today I've got a great guest. I'm talking about Angela Sheffield. Angela is the Director of Digital and AI Programs at SAIC. She's been on NucleCast before, but Angela, well, welcome to NucleCast again. It's great to have you back.
Good to be back, Adam.
Now, you and I were having a conversation the other day, and I was sharing a little bit of frustration in that a few months ago, I had been at a pony event at CSIS, and one of the panelists had said that we have no data and experience with, you know, basically nuclear war writ large. And so therefore, we can't really base the integration of artificial intelligence into NC3 on anything. We have no background or experience. And it was, for me, it was a little frustrating because I said, we've got lots of data for NC3 because we've been, you know, vetting IR signatures for 40 years. We've been doing all of these things. We haven't fought in a nuclear war. So therefore, sure, we don't have experience fighting a nuclear war, but we've done everything and trained and tested, and we've got real world data. And so as we contemplate the integration of artificial intelligence into the NC3 system, we do have lots of data that we could, you know, train AI on and these other things. And so for you, as somebody who looks at the application of artificial intelligence into DoD systems and NC3, you know, can you sort of, you know, as we were talking about this, I was expressing my frustration, and you as an AI person were sort of, you know, it's always good when somebody shakes their head in, you know, in agreement. So I was, you know, I thought, man, I'm obviously right. So that was great. But I wanted you to come on and sort of share with, you know, the NucleCast audience some of your thoughts on, you know, this concept that's swirling around about integrating AI and, you know, what it can and can't do. And, you know, is this concept of AI integration into NC3, is that just crazy? And, you know, give people some understanding of where we are and what we can do and what we have experience with and where are those risks?
Yeah. Well, Adam, first, thank you for having me, and it's good to see you. And, you know, I love to talk about this topic, though I will say what you just described, I hope, is like the outline for our conversation, because there was a lot wrapped up into all of that. But yeah, you know, of all of the, as you were first describing that, I was thinking, like, of all of the reasons why I hear or people say, you know, oh, it's hard to do AI in NC3. I hadn't quite heard that one yet. So I'm like, you know, okay, let's add that to the list. Right up front, I'll say to our listeners, this is moving quickly, not quickly in a way that is out of our control, but quickly in terms of the maturity and availability of the technology, and honestly, the demand of the mission, especially with the nuclear modernization demands coming up, with the, you know, the international tension and complexity of the environment, with some of what we've seen in the land wars in Europe recently. This isn't a theoretical question anymore. We have to understand the right ways to integrate AI safely, securely, reliably, according to the standards we hold for NC3. But how we do it, it's no longer really a question. I mean, this is going to be the only way that we're able to meet the demands that we expect of NC3. But to hit something that you said just right off the bat, you put it in a way that helped me understand some of people's holdups on this a little bit differently, which was we haven't fought a nuclear war before, so we don't have the data to train an AI system. And help me appreciate that maybe some of our listeners are thinking about, like, war games and you know, the thermonuclear, the Whopper, you know,
yes,
in war
yes.
games, and imagining that we're going to have to run simulations or have real world data about what happens to train this AI system to do nuclear war. And that's really not what we're talking about
No.
in terms of introducing AI into NC3. We're talking about much smaller components and subcomponents of the NC3. Life cycle is not the right word, but you know, the comprehensive
Architecture,
NC3
sure,
system,
yeah.
the architecture we're talking about. And even in the architecture, we're talking about single components and functions. And we won't like name any of them here, but like your example of, you know, signals and detecting different behaviors or characterizing orders of battle. We're talking about a really, really narrow piece of a chunk of discrete software that does a really, really narrow task, like helping us build out an order of battle or detect changes in an order of battle. And so to folks who are thinking, you know, we need to have seen a nuclear war, you don't know. We do have a lot of data like you proposed. You know, we have a lot of data on how you do detection of military assets and computer vision and imagery. We have a lot of data on that. We have a lot of data on both in terms of training data and in terms of empirical evidence on how to safely and securely integrate like AI that can help us do software-defined systems or, you know, sort of what's it called, signal hopping. You know, those are applications. But also to our listeners who I've, you know, who are keeping up at home in terms of AI. And I do appreciate that even 2 years ago you were thinking we need this training data. As the field has matured, that need for training data that represents the, you know, the sort of environment or behavior that you're trying to characterize isn't the only way that we solve problems with AI anymore. We can pull that thread a little bit later, but, you know, just to kind of address that head on. But there, I mean, there's really so much here. And again, I will say, just as broad and nuanced, just as diverse as the NC3 thing is, I mean, even you and me, Adam, we said, I mean, some of us think of NC3 in terms of people, some of us think of it in terms of architecture, some of us think of it in terms of facilities, some of us think about it in terms of weapons. AI is that diverse too. So we're really talking about picking a very specific technique and a very specific model and a very specific implementation for each different step. You know, it decomposes to the same level of specificity.
Yeah, I mean, as I think about it, and, you know, I was thinking about, you know, for the Air Force AI, or sorry, the Air Force NC3 system, you know, it's more than 100 components. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the DOD NC3 system of systems is almost, well, several hundred in discrete systems. And each one of them does some specific thing. Mm-hmm. So you might have a SBIR satellite, and that satellite looks at IR signatures, and it tries to, you know, it detects those signatures and then it tries to vet the signatures. Or you have software, you know, back on planet Earth, where we have a system that vets the signatures and says, oh, well, that based on that IR signature and based on the direction and based on that's probably, you know, a commercial satellite launch, or as opposed to a SS-18, or as opposed to a. And we've got lots and lots of that kind of data that we could create, that we could much more rapidly vet with, you know, AI. And by AI, I don't inherently mean it could be algorithms. It could be a combination of hard-coded systems and, you know, learning models. It could be multiple things. And you can also, just like a nuclear weapon has multiple safeties in it, it's got safety built on top of safety built on top of safety. You can build, you know, if you want to, just for, you know, IR characterization, you can have multiple models that have different designs and that can vet that signature. And then you can say, okay, well, for us to do something with the decision of the AI, the four different types of AIs, or essentially the four different eyes on that signature, they all have to agree on it. And so you've built in safety into AI. And I don't know that people understand that it's not just one sort of Whopper, and that Whopper is making all kinds of decisions. It's not really that.
No, and the way it will be integrated too, I mean, another reason that I'm excited about the Kim, let's put it this way, optimistically, excited about the community waking up to the, you know, enthusiastic embrace of AI. That's a little over the top, but it's because really the way that we end up, and what pays the bills for me is sitting down next to operators or decision makers and helping them figure out how to take a widget, we can call AI the widget, and put it in the right place in their workflow, whatever makes their job really hard or complex. You know, I have like a widget that might automate, like you said, you know, looking at a particular data type. Like that's the teensiest component of integrating that into the way that you do work. The rest of it comes from the operator, the decision maker. We're having a conversation about, you know, hey, if I can automate something, like, you know, how aggressively should we find detections? Are you concerned about false positives? Are you concerned about false negatives? Those are things we can tune. What are the data sources you want me to look at? What are the different, what guardrails are important to you? How do you handle portion mark classification if we're dealing about multiple levels of classification? You know, how do you want to receive the output? All of that customization is driven by the warfighter or the operator, the decision maker, or the, you know, whoever in NC3 would be adopting the system. It's all highly customizable. So no, we don't want, I hope that we can help to inform people not to think about some, you know, all encompassing capability that just gets dropped in and does the Whopper for you. It's not that. It's like a little widget that might help you get through data, and that data could be something that you see, like intelligence analysts look at data, or like, you know, someone sitting at StratCom might have to sort through lots of data. It could be automating, helping them comb through all that data, or looking for particular keywords, or perhaps looking for subtle themes or just patterns in the data that are not discernible to a human. That, you know, could be our automation or AI widget, or it could be something that's working like deeply under the hood that we can't see, where it's taking in telemetry between networks and finding vulnerabilities or finding blips that might be indicative of the network's degradation, you know, but it's doing something very specific, and we make it fit in there by working really collaboratively with folks who know and love these missions deeply to make that all-purpose widget fit specifically for their mission.
And, you know, one of the things I've been following, because I've wondered, as AI develops and it becomes more capable, you know, there was I don't know if you're familiar or the listeners are, but there's a website called Visual Graphic, and Visual Graphic sends out a daily graphic. And it's always, you know, which state has the highest taxes or which country has the highest happiness scores. You know, it's always something kind of interesting. Well, today it was one on the cost of training AIs and has it gone up or mm-hmm. down. Mm-hmm. And so it got me thinking about just education. You know, I've got kids who are going into college, and it got me thinking about, you know, are the jobs that they're going to college for going to be jobs that are replaced by AI in the future? And the wife and I were talking about, well, should we have our kids go into less sort of jobs where you sit at a desk and type, or should they be doing jobs that are, you know, that require wrench turning or, you know, welding or other things? Because an AI is probably not going to do a lot of that. You know, I don't think we'll have AI plumbers. We'll probably still need plumbers and electricians and all the things that an AI is not going to be able to do. And so one of the things I wondered is there going to be a degree here pretty soon where you get a bachelor's degree and you know how to, you're essentially the AI guy who comes into an organization sort of like what you're doing, but you really know how to make AIs useful and which ones to drop in and how to tweak them. And you essentially take somebody who's doing and performing a job, and you talk to them and integrate all the AIs that they could potentially use and want to speed up and improve the quality of the work they're doing. And you tweak it for them. And then you say, okay, we've got you set. You've got all your AIs in there in the right places, doing the right things, and you know how to use them, and then go forth and be, you know, five times as efficient. And that maybe that's like one of the future degrees that, you know, kids in a few years will be doing. And, you know, and I wonder just, and I think this is probably what scares a lot of people, is they're unsure of this transformation and what it means. And they've, you know, they're fearful of Skynet and, you know, AI bias and all of these other things that they hear about all the time. So walk us through, you know, how are we dealing with that? What are we doing? Is it going to be ever persistent, or are we sort of, is that part of the tweaking process? Help us understand that.
Yes. First I'll say shameless plug, but also not so shameless, because I work with a bunch of great folks who have assembled into a fantastic team that do what you described. So if you are looking for that, you know, drop in AI, make you better help, you know, give me a call. But so what we're finding this looks like in organizations that are, maybe I'll just say it, even when we talk about NC3 and the nuclear community in the Air Force or across the joint force to the, you know, where that makes sense, or across our joint agencies like DITRA, I think it's, we have these shared like expectations about something like the Whopper. Like, that's really not what we're talking about. This is, like many modernization initiatives, it's a journey that will unfold over time. That said, the sooner we can be a part of it, the more we'll be able to shape the integration of these tools into the way that we work, and then reshape stuff like training around it. So like you described, you know, right now, maybe we need an airman or a junior officer or a so-and-so. We expect a certain amount of skills. They do a certain thing in their job, whether they're an intelligence analyst or a, you know, some sort of policy analyst, or whether they have a more operational job. There is a different way that they will work when they're empowered by AI. So we need to get them exposed to tools so they can, we can change the training. Above that, we can change the doctrine to incorporate these tools. And the nuclear community wants to be a part of that story for the nuclear missions. We don't just want that to come down on high from big DOD or from the services. Honestly, like we're seeing with some of the OMB memos, some of the presidential memos calling for digital first, calling for the adoption of the cloud, calling for the integration of AI. There were two memos 2 weeks ago calling for the rampant adoption of AI to realize efficiencies. That's because they are the right way to approach complex and challenging missions. The nuclear community needs to begin playing with these so that we're a part of devising the ways that we do this. And kind of to a point, so maybe some of your listeners are familiar with ChatGPT. Of course, you know, folks who are in the DOD or in the Air Force are probably using some of these GPTs in DOD environments. So they're already seeing how AI is changing how they work from something like that. That's a really non-intrusive, really non-specific AI technology. We can take the power, or we are taking for a number of missions, the power of what you get from something like a ChatGPT, and baking it into business and mission operations. Like, for example, so outside of NC3, I do a lot of support to modernizing conventional command and control. And for folks who, you know, are following along at home who do Air Force stuff, we know that in terms of air operations in the air domain, the air tasking order is the way that we approach command and control for conventional air stuff. So we're looking at ways that we can use, you know, think that chat experience that you have, but have that chat experience generate the air tasking order securely by interconnecting it with trusted data sources, Air Force data sources, by putting appropriate guardrails on so that the generated responses make sense, both pass muster and are accurate and relevant. And then what that is doing is it is changing the time it takes to generate an air tasking order. I'm sure you have listeners who have done that. It's a super manual process, involves going to lots and lots of different systems, prone to human errors, takes hours, takes like a whole day. That's why the air tasking order is 24 hours. But if you can generate the air tasking order instantaneously, and if you can update it based on changes in the operating environment, it changes the whole way we do battle management in the air domain. And those are the sorts of, again, like slow and incremental changes that we want to introduce to these missions, and then also reimagine mission operations around that. And again, these are the sorts of things that we want to bring into NC3 where appropriate. and that we want our nuclear SMEs, our NC3 SMEs, to be a part of so that we make sure the changes make sense for the nuclear community.
Now it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we'll do that and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back and we're talking to Angela Sheffield. We're discussing the integration of AI. So the nuclear community, I would bet, probably based on your experience, you can either confirm or say, no, Adam, you got it wrong, that the nuclear community is probably more skeptical of integrating AI and NC3. And, you know, you mentioned cloud computing and, you know, just this sort of ubiquitous digital computing for the management and modernization of the NC3 system of systems. Can you maybe talk about that? Is there a more reticence in the nuclear community, or are they on board and like, hey, let's go, let's do this? Or is there fear for, you know, hacking and the, you know, our adversaries getting into our systems, and how do we prevent that? And, you know, will the AI make a mistake? And sort of all of these concerns that are, you know, come with going from analog to digital to integrating AI to all of that stuff.
Yeah, Adam, you and I talked about how sometimes the loudest voices in something like AI and NC3 are folks who, you know, either are or aren't involved in current nuclear operations, current NC3 and stuff. I've had the opportunity to engage with the like active operational nuclear community, NC3 and other parts of the nuclear community really recently, or all the time, but I'm thinking of a couple engagements recently. And our folks in uniform, our folks in positions, you know, civil servants and things, are eager. They're seeing that, I mean, they're playing with ChatGPT at home. They're playing with an AI-enabled systems at home. They're banking online. We've been banking forever. That's like one of your most secure personal things. And they understand, they have an expectation that these technologies could be useful for NC3. So I think the assumption that the community is incredibly reticent is not true. I do see an eagerness to lean in and adopt. I think there's a ton of need to get smart, or to have more conversations between smart digital AI and IT people who understand, you know, not just we have a lot of AI R&D people in the community because we have a lot of R&D people in our community. But when we're talking about introducing AI into NC3, I mean, that is, like we've said, a systems of systems. It's an IT, it's a mission technology system. It's a different way of thinking about technology than just R&D projects or doing like signal processing or something. So I think having more conversations between the right informed experts is important, because then we can say things like, well, what exactly is your holdup? And the answer can be, I have a really specific security concern here. And we say, well, okay, well, how do we do it now? Is it even a good place for an AI introduction? I'm thinking of there are some places where NC3 does zero trust cybersecurity really well, because zero trust is kind of a cyber physical, you know, not perimeter, not assuming your network is secure approach to security that is actually really well aligned to how NC3 is structured by nature. You know, so there are some places where when we sync back up on a modern technological way of understanding, it just opens tons more doors. One area that just like not a lot of people understand is the way, and I'm not going to say it explicitly, but folks on the call will know, there are different ways that we handle nuclear data, Atomic Energy Act data, than we handle other operational military data. That has some policy and operation considerations that maybe right, maybe outdated. It has some really interesting technological considerations and impacts to how we would approach integrating and implementing technologies. And we need to have those conversations to even have the option to do data and AI, data-centric and AI-enabled technologies in NC3, and to make sure that we make the right choices. So, I mean, I hate for a conversation just to go to upskilling. Maybe I won't say upskilling, but a little bit longer conversations to understand not the big boogeyman of AI, but like specifically, where do you have security and cybersecurity concerns? Specifically, where do you have information sharing or non-sharing concerns? Specifically, and really get them, because there are a lot of paths forward to pursue.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. One of the I read an article that was, I think it was in War on the Rocks, and it was from Jim Lacy. And Jim's an older guy, and he's a military historian. And he wrote about how he started using AI systems to teach, to grade papers, to do all sorts of things as a military historian. And you generally don't look at, you know, older military historians as AI adopters. But I read his article and I was like, well, if Jim could do it, then I probably ought to be doing the same thing and at least playing with it and seeing where it can be useful, where I don't want to use it, and understanding the breadth of capabilities that are out there. And, you know, some of them that he mentioned, I had never even heard of, but they do specific things that are helpful and useful. And so I wonder if part of the challenge that we deal with is just that there's so much we don't know, because we're caught up in doing what we're doing and we work, you know, our 50 hours a week, and, you know, and then when we're done, we're like, man, I don't have time to learn anymore. I got to take the kids to soccer, and I got this thing to do, and I got that thing. And so becoming an AI expert is just one more thing I don't have time for. And so therefore we just try to, you know, in a very human way, we just say, okay, well, it would just be better if it wasn't there, because then I wouldn't have to learn about it.
I know folks in your audience have to be like, we've all had the experience of like, hasn't somebody told you something about nuclear, or like, I'm asking your audience, where, you know, they're like, oh, it goes this way and that way. And, oh, you know, all it would take to like turn from not weapons grade to weapons grade something is X, Y, Z. It's totally wrong. It's totally uninformed. Like, yes. Yeah. And you just want to say, no, trust me. Like, I'm the SME. You don't know about this in the way. Or NC3, you know, misunderstandings of NC3. It is that in the AI space. So we, you know, kind of like you're saying, we ask for trust of the other subject matter experts. It can seem intuitive, just like, I don't know, anything can seem intuitive, but it's really complex and technical and real and hard. And we on the technologist side have a responsibility to grow and to mentor people that can also come to the table and represent the technology. But it will take a table of different stakeholders to have these conversations as we look to, like, we have to be introducing these, embracing them, you know, as we look to modernize to the next generation of what NC3 and our weapon systems will look like. And again, yeah. And I haven't spent too much time talking about it, but the DoD is investing in a huge way in the modernization of its conventional command and control systems. And there, the nuclear community has so many lessons learned, so many technologies to lift and shift as appropriate from those investments in, we haven't even said it, but Joint All Domain Command and Control, CJADC2, JADC2, those initiatives, is getting a ton of money. And that's a great opportunity. Like, let the conventional forces buy down the risk, pay to buy down the risk for the nuclear forces to adopt these technologies. That's happening in spades right now in programs. SAIC is the prime system integrator for the Joint Fires Network at Indo-PACOM, which is modernizing their Joint Fires Integrated Combined Fires environment to enable a machine-to-machine totally digital kill chain, introducing AI there. Let us figure out the right and wrong in the conventional spaces and then adopt what is working there. We're doing the same with the conventional air C2 for the Air Force, modernizing all of its air operations centers to be cloud, replacing manual archaic workflows with data-centric, with data-driven and cloud-enabled, doing cloud and edge, integrating artificial intelligence to do COA generation in addition to this ATO generation I shared. Again, let the conventional forces do that exploration. They're more heavily funded, buy down that risk, and let's cherry pick what's working really well to pull into NC3, especially with the modernization coming, you know? But we can really look to see, again, both in terms of data and empirical evidence, what is working in those. I didn't even mention the Army or the Navy, but so much investment in CJADC2 that we can take advantage of in NC3.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about taking what works from the conventional side and saying this works for us, but this other capability or component mm-hmm. does not. So Yeah, that's a good good approach. Now, we are at that time where we have to bring out Bob the Genie. And so as I bring out Bob and rub my magic lamp, Bob, of course, grants all guests three wishes, so long as they relate to the topics we've been discussing. No, you know, wealth or bars of gold or, you know, youth or any of that stuff. Again, we're all going to get old. Bob's not helping that one. But he does help with wishes related to, in this case, AI and NC3. So, Angela, what is your first wish?
My first wish for AI for NC3? Oh, man. We can't wish for more wishes. Like, you can't wish for more wishes. You can't wish for more money, right?
Yep.
I mean, I hate to wish because I feel like I know the other people on the side of this. Like, I'm begging them but I do hope, you know, I do hope in response to, I hope that the nuclear community no longer asks for an exemption or to be an appendix to an exercise, you know, really embraces these AI memos are coming down. Software acquisition pathway, which is calling for sort of more agile and incremental software development for all sorts of acquisitions. Major acquisition programs are about to go through a review. My wish would be that the nuclear community doesn't say we would like an exemption, but they say we would like to be an exemplar for how to do this, because I think it's both a great opportunity to support the missions that we serve. I think we can do it reliably. And I don't think we have any reason to lean out and would like to see us lean in. So that would be my first wish.
That's a good wish. I like that. I like that. That's a good one. Okay. So you're off to a strong start. Okay. How about wish number two?
Shoot, man. I should have been prepared for wish number two, right? This is not so much as what we've been talking about, but I also hope, and this is related to CJADC too. So you mentioned, you know, I've had a job change. So before leaving industry, of course, I was at DOE NNSA doing a lot of nuclear nonproliferation stuff. Since leaving industry, which means you pay the bills, you know, I've been doing a lot of CJADC2, Joint All Domain Command and Control Modernization, because that's where a ton of money is in for digital in the DOD right now. And I really hope that my wish would be that we, you know, continue to lean in. I was hoping that CJADC2, again, that the nuclear community would raise its hand and say, we want to be really a part of CJADC2 and use that to tackle things like conventional nuclear integration in a real way. I'll just say that. So I hope we continue to lean into this work. Jointness sounds, you know, so aspirational. So it's not jointness, but real meaningful integration, again, especially considering what we've seen in the European theater in the last few years. I hope that we continue to leverage these big initiatives to lean into things like conventional nuclear integration in a real tangible way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one too. Okay. So you're down to your final wish. So make it a good one.
Can I be a little self-serving? Maybe if
sure.
Both of the two wishes come true. I hope that our listeners to the community, will seek out folks like myself to help be a part of solving the problem. I think we have a lot of great work to do. So say, you know, we're leaning into digital modernization, leaning into the, sort of DOGE demands, new administration demands for digital first and AI native and, efficiencies. We're leaning into CNI, and then call me and like, let's get to work.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think Bob has ever said, you know, you can't ever benefit from a wish. So, you know, and if I were to have a wish here, my wish mm-hmm. would be that people who don't know much about NC3 and then also don't know much about AI would spend more time learning about it and be more careful and reticent to, you know, sort of make sweeping generalizations that might not be accurate. Because I don't think that's really helpful for some of the wicked problems that, and, you know, the challenges, because we all want to be efficient with taxpayer dollars, and we want to deter adversaries, and we want to do all those things really, really well. And, you know, I've got family, and so I don't want accidental launch, and I don't want miscalculation. Mm-hmm. I don't want any of those things, but I want I want to do it well, and I don't want decisions made based on bad information. And so that would sort of be my wish. But yeah, so thanks for coming back on NucleCast. It's been a great discussion. You know, folks, you know, Angela Sheffield, if you have a question, reach out and ask her, and she'll always be there to help. So thanks for coming back on NucleCast.
Anytime, Adam.
And of course, thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.